For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. And it's before we go on air, it always becomes very dynamic with the engineer running around sometimes because something has happened or hasn't happened. But anyway, it has made my life much more interesting going live instead of pre-recording. As I also always say, just for those people who have just heard the show for the first time today, many of these shows actually interact or dovetail with each other and with the previous shows, and they'll build off of future shows and so forth. So consequently, to stay abreast with the content that I am sharing with you, then you will need to listen to all of these shows so that you can kind of put these pieces together, because this is only 1 hour. And what I'm trying to do is give you so much voluminous data and empirical information and evidence to help you make an affirmation and confirm and commit yourself to the fact that we need to step in. We can no longer allow ourselves to live under federal tyranny. So to do that, to get all these other pieces, you can go to my website and download the podcast. And that website is ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. On local news, local announcements, which I try to do every week. And so for the next few weeks, there'll be the standard announcements of the Lincoln Day dinners. The GOP party at this time of year always has their Lincoln Day dinners. These are fundraisers so that they can help infuse, you know, needed cash to help support the Republican candidates and help move the GOP into a better prominence, especially in Spokane. And so Stevens County's Lincoln Day dinner is the 6th of May. And having personally gone to this before, this is truly a fun event. And it's educational and it's, you know, family oriented. And if you want to buy a table, I would just take your whole family, because the auctioning, the raffling, and all the stuff that they do, they just make it really entertaining and not so formal. The Spokane Lincoln Day Dinner, they're hosting theirs on the 3rd of June. And so make sure you get your tickets and you can go online for the Spokane GOP Lincoln Day Dinner and you can buy your tickets and get your reservations there. There is also an event that's happening tonight, and it is the Northwest Grassroots, and they are having their movie night tonight. And the focus of this month is the American healthcare debacle. The meeting starts at 6 p.m. That's less than 2 hours, and it's happening at Darcy's on Sprague. It's at 10502 East Sprague Avenue, Spokane Valley. These are always informative. I try to go when I can, but it's just because I do this, I now have a direct conflict for me to even make it there. So it's very hard. But they're always informative. And this is an organization that is very supportive of the Spokane grassroots efforts and helping politicians, so you can meet them, give you a chance to meet and listen to their positions and so forth. So if you're looking for a place to network and get involved, this is a great place. So make sure you head down to Darcy's tonight in 2 hours. Don't have dinner. Just go down there, because you can actually order off of the menu. And while you're sitting there listening for the movie night or the information that they're providing and the interaction between those who go, You'll find this very informative and worthwhile, and you'll be able to meet other like-minded and liberty-minded people. The final announcement that I have, and Tony, forgive me. I'm really bad with names. I believe it's Kaipe. He is hosting a kickoff, so I just call him Tony. Tony's hosting a kickoff for his campaign to unseat Brian Beggs for Spokane City Council. His kickoff meeting is tomorrow, not tonight. It's Thursday, April 13th at David's Pizza from 6 to 7:30. For those who are frustrated and tired of the direction this great city is going and want to see Spokane actualize its potential, please come out so that you can get informed and get involved. Remember, as I always say, one of my fundamental premises, knowledge is power. So remember, come get involved, learn what you need to know, and go act on that and help. So this week, I want to build off of something that I kind of spun into last week before we got into our guest, Mark Urbach. But instead of doing a quick constitutional minute, I actually want to delve more into this concept of what happened with the Senate. And after talking to a few listeners offline, I think it's really important that we kind of take a in-depth look at the bigger picture here. This may delay my reading of the Federalist Papers and Death by Paper Cuts, and I really hope that that what you're getting in the papers, the Federalist Papers that I'm reading, is helping you go, wow, I did not know this. I'm hoping that these epiphanies and this factual information that I'm providing you is helping you reinforce your desire to getting involved, because I truly believe that it requires some level of information before somebody's going to commit and stand up and say, stop this. You're not even supposed to be doing this. Where did you get this power? And so I'm hoping that information will actually motivate you, because again, information or knowledge is power. So anyway, today's show may go longer on this topic because it's about republicanism and our Republican form of government. I know this is something we can fix as far as our Republican form of government, especially with the trifecta that we have in D.C., and especially with, I think, the frustration at most all these states in having to deal with the democracy and the liberal agenda that they have basically set in place over the past century. So this is where we get informed. So let me start off with some end goals. Because I was actually talking to a few leaders of thought, and I don't want to share, you know, who I was talking to, but they really didn't believe that we would be able to repeal the 17th Amendment, but I truly believe so. And so as I go through these next few weeks and talk about republicanism and the Republican form of government, I think these are all interrelated, and I believe that we can repeal the 17th Amendment. So how would you feel if your help, your efforts could actually help us repeal the 17th Amendment? How would you like to make state governments Republican in form and representative of both the people and the counties once again? I'm going to take a little side here. If you notice, if you start looking at the legislative districts in this state and in other states, many counties have completely lost their voice. The next question, how would you like to permanently change the makeup of the U.S. Senate so that it no longer is purchased and ran by special interests and lobbyists? Let's close the doors to the lobbyists, to the billionaires that come in there and write big checks. And we can do this by repealing that 17th Amendment. So how do you feel if you could actually be a part of doing this? Would you like to turn it into a bulwark, the Senate, the U.S. Senate, would you like to turn it into a bulwark of conservative constitutional senators once again? I would say yes, especially if anybody's aware of some of the legislation, or I should say treaties, that they've had to kind of look at and, you know, basically say, are you serious? we've dealt with some treaties coming up from the UN and other governance entities that basically want us to throttle or take away our Second Amendment rights. And fortunately, none of those treaties have been ratified by the Senate, but they could. But I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself. So I'm going to delve into republicanism and a republican form of government today, and you really want to stay tuned to this so that you can understand what this stuff means. So please stay tuned, and I will be right back to help elucidate these issues. Thank you. You will find consistent advice among financial advisors, conservative entertainers, preppers, and those who have legitimate concern about our currency and our government. They all recommend holding precious metals in some way and degree for varying reasons. I, too, recommend precious metals, especially holding it in your possession in a secure storage system for several reasons. One, it can protect you from the inflation of a fiat currency. Two, some coins can be used in bartering in an absolute emergency. And three, this is a good way to pass wealth down to your posterity. If you are looking to add precious metals to your portfolio or to your holdings, I would like to show you how you can get these metals for less than how I can get them. You heard that correct, for less than how I can get them. And I believe you cannot beat this price. Let me explain. My broker's company has, I believe, the lowest set price for all metals on the market. And just like all other precious metal companies, they offer commission to those who refer others, which most times this affects the bottom line price. Well, my broker's company does not adjust the price. They have a flat buy and selling price. And I have worked it out with my broker to take a portion of my commission to offer you a discount to let you save money on your purchases for slightly lower than the price, than the selling price that I get them for. It may be a slight discount, but a discount nonetheless. If you're interested in buying physical metals at the lowest price and learning more about this deal, contact me via email at metals, with an S at the end, at reclaimingtherepublic.org. And I will introduce you to my broker, and he can give you the pricing and how you will actually pay less than me. Again, that's metals, M-E-T-A-L-S, at reclaimingtherepublic.org. Thank you. Well, if you've ever heard the revolution will be televised, let's just rephrase that to the revolution will be broadcasted. As I was just saying before we went into break, I kind of identified some end goals, or basically set some parameters for us if we work together and we leveraged the republicanism and the republican form of government that the framers had instilled or basically set up in both our federal government and throughout the United States, we can actually obtain these goals. And these goals would actually, I think, help also get the movement of Republic Review and so forth. These are a little independent, but I've just been so frustrated with what's been going on regarding republicanism. And when I talk to people that are either Republican or they, you know, conservative, and I ask them, what is republicanism? What's a republican form of government? And as a matter of fact, when you look into case law and so forth, there's a lot of people that just say it's really ambiguous, but I'm telling you it's not. What Madison and the framers designed, they actually set the template up in the Constitution and within the Republic, or I call it a hybrid constitution republic. So anyway, if you'd like to repeal all of these, the 17th Amendment, and get Republican form government back into the states and so forth, then you definitely want to listen, and you want to kind of get this. You want to understand what republicanism and republican form government is. For us to do this, I need to convince you that this is not only an ambitious idea, but this can be done rather quickly as long as we work together. To start, I will have to give you enough background and information to help you recognize that we have been robbed of the government we were given long ago by our framers and our founders. That said, this topic will likely span well over an hour, as I was talking to the producer, looking at how much material there is to go through and giving you all of the important asides, because when I bring something up, it's going to force me to kind of give you more information on that type of topic. So this will take a while, but this is paramount that we cover this now. Because if we get started now, then we can actually see the fruit of our efforts and see this actually change this year. It wouldn't take long. But if I delay this and stretch this out, then, you know, we'll never get there. And as long as I just try to be an entertaining person, like your regular conservative entertainers talking about the news and what's going on with Russia and what's going on with the markets, then you'll never learn anything to really change the course that we've been put onto by the progressives. And so for us to change our course and get back, knowledge is power and the Constitution is our weapon. Though many may think that the confirming of Justice Gorsuch by doing away with the current rule in the Senate for confirming Supreme Court justices was a good thing because we got our guy in, but you have to understand, the Senate has been moved more and more to a mob rule mentality. I know I say this a lot, but we happen to possess a hybrid constitutional republic. What the government ran, our government ran public education system, and what they've been teaching for years has basically been teaching us that we are a democracy form of government. This is an outright lie. Before this concept of democracy, though, which started in the counterculture revolution, the public school system actually taught that the nation, emphasis on nation here, that the nation we live in is a federal or a federated republic, are also referred to as a constitutional republic. But the key thing in their doctrine is that this federated or federal government was an absolute sovereign and had the power to do anything it felt necessary and proper to do because it was the supreme government of the land. Well, for over a century, this concept has permeated throughout this society and throughout our education system, and it seems like everybody has been drinking the Kool-Aid. This is why many authors like Ayn Rand, Aldous Huxley, and even George Orwell wrote books and screenplays that reflected an all-powerful federal government that had unlimited powers. Had these authors understood the hard limitations that the framers installed, they may have wrote books about how we would be able to take a stand and take this republic back. This is why I wrote my books, to academically make this case that we not only can, that according to Jefferson and Madison, we and our state legislatures are obligated to take back our Constitution. And I'm saying we as citizens, we're held in that the oath of a citizen of protecting and defending the Constitution is implied on us. I've said this before. We are obligated to do something about it. And if we're not, we're complacent and culpable of letting this happen. If you have not read some of the reviews of my books, go to Amazon and just look up G.R. Mobley. Just, you know, search for G.R. Mobley. My books will pop up there. And I have two that have been published. The blue one is the first one, We the People, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway? A Constitutional Fix to a Constitutional Problem. And the red one is the second book, and it is The Strategy to Convene a Convention for Republic Review. That said, even though you haven't even read my books, by listening to this show, you should have learned already that these paradigms or models are obfuscations of the truth. This show will prove, and this material and content that I've been providing you will provide you, and hopefully teaching and motivating over the past few months and, you know, for this year and the following year, because I don't want to do this. I would much rather be doing other things that I have other talents for, because I'm not a professional newscaster. I'm not a professional journalist. I'm just that motivated and I'm that convinced. And because nobody can prove me wrong and I have more constitutionalists supporting me and saying, yes, this would work. The only problem is that they can't make money in it. And that's why they won't directly support me, because money's what makes them go around. Anyway, so that's why I'm asking for, you know, constantly for your support, help, and so forth, because I am the lone guy out there with the solution, and I'm not going to be that entertaining, and I may not ever become that polished, but anyway, I digress. This show will prove that what they have been teaching in our school system for well over a century is nowhere near what the framers designed and what the founders have installed. And I use these two words, framers and founders, and they're very distinctively different in my paradigm, and I want to share that with you right now. And I know that I'm going down these paths, but I think it's really important, because most people don't understand, because they think they're interchangeable, and they're not. The word constitution, contract, and compact are interchangeable because they mean the same thing, because the constitution is a contract. The word framer, these are men that actually did the initial drafting, the design work, and creating our government from the Declaration of Independence throughout the Articles of Confederation and all of the different ordinances and acts that they built upon during that period of time up to the Constitution and moving forward. The men that did this work, Madison, Hamilton, Jefferson, Franklin, Rufus King, I mean, I can't list them all. It would take this whole show. But all of these contributors, they were the framers. Most people think that the framers were exclusive to the Constitutional Convention. But that's not true. The Constitutional Convention built off of, and if you read the Federalist Papers, they literally built off of the Articles of Confederation. They literally built off of even writings of Montesquieu, Locke, and others. And so that's one of the reasons why, you know, we, you know, have these men, and they are called framers. The founders, I'll give you this and I'll explain it right after this break. The founders are the states. They're not men. They're not people. The founders are the states, and I'll share this when we get back from the break. So hopefully that'll keep you tuned. What does he mean by that? We'll be right back. I was on this aside, and I don't want to take too long on this, but when I use the words framers and founders, I want to be very clear that the framers are men. The framers are the guys that were doing it. The framers were the guys who were literally going fist to cuff sometimes over supporting their arguments and so forth. And please keep in mind that when some of these debates occurred, sometimes there were duels that ensued because people's honor was violated. So it was definitely a different paradigm back then. Anyway, the founders of the states, and why are they the founders? Because if you read Article 7 of the Constitution identifies how many founders, how many states have to buy in to become principal owners of this Constitution, where they become the plank holder, the stakeholder, owner. As a corporation is established, the founders are the people that literally framed and created that corporation, business, or what have you. It's the same thing with the states. But the difference between the founders of this republic and the framers died. The founders weren't. And that's one of the reasons why the founders or the states were given such an onerous responsibility of oversight of this Constitution. They were perpetual entities that were supposed to take charge of any violations and ensure that the delegated powers given to the federal government were kept to what they were, or the Constitution was amended. So Now you know that the founders are really the states. The men couldn't have been founders. They had no authority to ratify. It was the state as a collective of people ratified as the state. And just like today, when we amend a constitution, even though it may be we the people that debate it, or the legislatures debate it through our representatives, we debate the amendment, but it is the state that actually is the ratifying entity, and it is a single vote yes. And so that's why they require 38 votes for yes for an amendment to be ratified and approved. Anyway, the whole point is that you see this morphing of what has originally set as a limited and defined government by the framers, which this morphing started in 1803 with John Marshall as he started creating unconstitutional footings. Today, our government has become a monster, or what some refer to as a Leviathan, that is ruling almost every facet of our life, well beyond the constitutional boundaries and intents. As I've been pontificating this for years, we have to step in. Why is this important, or what does this have to do with the confirmation of Justice Gorsuch? As conservatives stand, or as conservatives took a stand, I should say, in not confirming Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland, that was the checks that we had at that point in time of not allowing a nuclear option to go forward because the Democrats could not move it forward. Well, the same should apply today. The design of republicanism was not to allow a mob rule, a 50 plus one type of vote to rule the day and the processes of voting within the Senate. What was supposed to happen was you were supposed to have a large enough collective ascension to the nomination, which in some cases, it wasn't just a nomination, it was a constitutional amendment, which would require 67 votes. That being said, allowing this to become a mob rule mentality, even though we may have won, even though this may have been a good thing, the consequences down the road are not good. The problem is not that we are politically divided. The problem is that we have deviated so far from the Republican standards that the framers have set in place, that we have to, that we now have a basic mob rule mentality and an oppressive government for way too long. And it's only getting worse, and we are sliding further away from republicanism because of this mentality and move in the Senate. Again, let me be optimistic now and give you the positive message. Yes, we can change this a lot easier than you think, and we are in a mess because we've allowed the secular progressives to continue to slowly push their agenda on us and get us to believe that we do have a democratic government. Truth be told, we've been living in a constitutional crisis for a very long time and are dangerously, dangerously close to a constitutional disaster. Someday, our politicians may actually choose to discard the Constitution for political expediency because all of these checks have been removed, and we can't allow that to happen. You see, folks, had our grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents not allowed the politicians to dupe them in 1912 when Congress proposed the 17th Amendment, it and we and this nation and this republic would not have been so easy for the progressives to push down their secular path or the secular progressive agenda that they have been ramming down our throats. What the 17th Amendment did was shift the Senate from a state appointment to a position of elections for the general public, allowing the common voter to select representatives for the state. Well, that doesn't seem like that was so bad. just letting these people get elected by the, you know, the people, because the representatives of the state are elected by the people. That's not the problem. The problem is that the people don't understand the state issues. You should see how this has perverted our form of republicanism and our bicameral or dual sovereignty form of government. These senators were accountable at one point in time to the states, and now they're supposedly accountable to the people. But the old rule or the old adage that I've always followed is he who pays the piper calls the tune. And so you can think about that for a little while. Who do these senators really follow? It is far too common for me to meet people who do not understand why we have a bicameral Congress and why states were supposed to emulate this. That's why this state has a Senate and a legislative body of representatives. Madison understood, and the framers understood, what republicanism was and why there was a necessity to support this bicameral, or I should say a dual sovereignty, in our government system as a legislative body. And so that's why they created this dual separation within the central government, and basically within the Constitution stated that all government should be Republican in form. First off, let's understand the role of the Senate. At a high level, the Senate controls the ratification of treaties, the nominations of top cabinet members from the president, and federal appointments, as well as Supreme Court appointments. Let me pause on this first role. If you understand a treaty, many of these have effects on the states, whether it be like NAFTA and the trade agreements or what have you. Treaties, 9 times out of 10, have a direct effect on the states. And the average citizen may not have any idea as to what's going on in these treaties or have any insight on how it's going to affect some type of commerce or some type of mining or some interrelated business. And so, unfortunately, citizens are just clueless to what is happening in these treaties and how they will impact us. And yet the citizens are the ones that are electing senators. These were huge checks, you know, of separations of power within the government that was given to states. What some may refer to as a separation of powers, and the progressives have obfuscated the truth to get the 17th Amendment passed, I will tell you that it has been a long and slow train as those senators who were appointed got voted out after their tenure or after they died, because a lot of those guys just stayed in. But when they started replacing these senators, they started funneling money in via the globalists and so forth. Anyway, you also have to remember that once a treaty is ratified, it becomes the supreme law of the land. Yes, if a treaty is a direct conflict with the Constitution, like we have seen in many recent attempted treaties with the UN regarding gun control, then the treaty trumps the Constitution. Once the Senate ratifies it, the treaty takes precedence. I hope you can chew on that. There's still a lot more I need to cover, so please stay tuned, and I'll get into even more when we get back. You know, I know this is a long and deep subject, but I know that it's really important to not just kind of gloss over this, because when I do talk to people about Republican form government and republicanism, they're either their eyes glaze over, or, you know, when I come back and talk to them about it some more, obviously it either didn't sink in, I didn't go into enough detail, and so forth. So I think it's important that I give you the historical and constitutional basis first, so that we all know and understand what we need to do. Remember again that key principle, knowledge is power. Anyway, what the 17th Amendment did was it took away the state's ability to speak for itself in cases of constitutional amendments, or actually, it took away its ability to speak for itself except in the case of constitutional amendments. What the states lost was their checks within legislation that was going through Congress that may have originated in the House or originated in the Senate. They lost their ability to say, you can't pass that. It's not that they don't have the ability to communicate, but like I said earlier, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And if they're not beholden to the state, then they're beholden to whom? Who gave them their money? Who gave them their millions of dollars? And if you do the research, the amount of money that pours into some of these Senate seats, you'd think that these people were gods or kings and queens, but they're not. They're not even... they're not even smart. They may be smart in some respects, but they do not understand the Constitution. And if you've listened to some of them talk, you'd think, you know, we could probably just get somebody off the street. They'd probably do a better job and more eloquent than some of the things I've heard out of some of these senators. Anyway, the amendment process, that did not change the state sovereignties of the Constitution in ratifying amendments, but what it did do was it took away the state sovereignty in placing these critical checks on the government that I've been saying. For the most part, too many people are either indifferent or illiterate, just like our senators, on these matters. And I'm absolutely embarrassed when I hear our senators or when I watch an episode of people on the street when they get quizzed on who is this, what is this, and so forth. To be clear, this is a shining star of success for our education system, seeing these people not knowing anything on the streets. Why is illiteracy a success? Because if you take the time to study history and compare the empirical data, the policies and strategies the progressives are implementing and ramming down our throat, they've all failed time and time again. And if you're uninformed, you won't know the difference and you won't stand up to stop these failed policies. This is why they can give you the same lame excuses that they've used over the centuries in different societies practically to convince you that you need their assistance in everything. Read Plato's Republic. This is how far back these ideologies have come from. The fact is that government needs you. You don't need them, but they've convinced us otherwise. They need you to be complacent and surrender your liberties one at a time, just like the boiling of a frog metaphor. The boiling is done slowly, 1 degree at a time. Let me state this more eloquently. The government education system, or what I like to call our national secular churches, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday school, because they don't have a Sunday school. That's what Christian churches, they have Sunday schools, but this National Secular Church has Monday through Friday school. And this school is indoctrinating our citizens in becoming good practitioners of the secular faith and to ensure the citizens are either misinformed, ill-informed, or uninformed. And you can see the results when you watch the Man on the Street episodes with, you know, what Jay Leno used to do it and so forth. I am also sure that you have heard many people complain, and maybe you're one of them. I'm one of them, to complain about the stupidity of the American voter. The common complaint goes kind of like this. People should not be allowed to vote unless they are informed on the issues and candidates. We must remember, and this is the historical context for this, folks. We've got to remember that the framers did not allow everyone to vote and were nothing like a democracy. We have been subverted into becoming. They're nothing like what we were today. And so what's going through most people's heads when they hear how voting was done back then? Just so you know, it wasn't only white men who voted. Many states, at the beginning of the ratification of the Constitution, allowed black men to vote. They were free men, but they allowed them to vote. But it wasn't just that. voting was restricted to the heads of property. In other words, you had to be a property owner if you were going to vote. Sons may have been of voting age, but if they didn't own property, then they couldn't vote. So it wasn't just all white men. It was property owners, and it wasn't limited to the race. Again, there were plenty of states, and I forget which, I think it was like five or seven states, the northern states who've already kind of implemented abolition and had plenty of freemen working and property owners and so forth. Even in the South, I remember they actually allowed them to vote until, you know, they in 1660 something, they passed a law that blacks at that point became slaves and, you know, had to be blacks. And so I think most of the property owners and so forth migrated away from those states that enacted those types of laws. And there were on the records black men voting in the North during the constitutional time frame. Now, women, at the risk of probably causing a riot here, women were a little bit different, and they I don't want to say they were frailer, but they had a much higher mortality rate just due to the fact that they were childbearing. And in the agrarian society, having lots of kids was very common. And so it wasn't uncommon that men lost their wives in childbirth because they just didn't even infancy mortality was very high. In other words, they didn't name their children for the first year or two. As a matter of fact, I remember the Adams, when they had John Quincy Adams and some of their other children, they would refer to them as the guest or the visitor or what have you for the first couple of years because they didn't know if they were going to survive. It wasn't until after they got to 2 or 3 years old where they actually named people. They named their kids. I'm sorry, and named people. Anyway. I get excited, and I need to be going a little slower here. The fact is that the paradigm back then was a lot, and I'll repeat this, a lot different than today. And they didn't just willy-nilly give the electorate to just anybody. You had to be somebody that was substantiated within your community and understood this. What most educators and progressives portray is far from the truth, as you have learned from listening to the show. They have a narrative that they have to stick to so that they can keep you in their camp. You also have to remember that the voter back in those days also had to pay a poll tax to ensure that they weren't just solvent, but industrious enough to vote. Paupers, vagrants, and even the indigent were not allowed to vote. And you had to bear an oath at the time to affirm that you were who you said you were, and that were able to come up with the money, you owned all of this property. So you basically took this oath, and who did you take that oath with? Well, the voting was conducted by the sheriffs. The sheriffs could call the election over. They had a lot more power than they do today regarding the voting process. And the sheriffs of the county had the prerogative to not allow you to vote if he felt that you were not who you said you were or what you claimed. It wasn't just about taking your money. Let me take an aside here. You notice I said county. The counties were the seats of local governments within the states back in the Republic back then. And this was how the states set the example model for the bicameral design that the framers ended up using. And that's why they basically established this dual or bicameral sovereignty within our legislative body. Anyway. Back then, the citizens guarded their suffrage and their government with extreme jealousy because the two are interrelated and because the government historically and even recently has proven to be oppressive, such so that the framers recently repelled such oppression and getting ready to repel it again in the next couple of decades, because if you remember, they weren't done with the British after the Revolutionary War. That didn't really finalize until the War of 1812. Now, I can go on, but I can realize that I'm also coming to the end of this time frame for this hour window. So come back next week, and I'll get into more of this Republican form of government and how they set it up and why they set it up the way they did and how we can get back there. So we'll hear from you next week. And if you want to hit me on Facebook, please do.
Market news, financial advice, the money matters that matter most to you. We make money make more sense. Money Talk, 1230 KSBN Spokane.